I think it's very appropriate that we here in this cold evening talking about the class struggle in Europe, because as we are here in this cold evening in Cambridge, important events that will have an impact on the future of the world economy and the class struggle in Europe are taking place as we speak in Greece. Today there is a general strike in Greece that was called only yesterday. It's a 48-hour general strike. This is a bit unusual because the general strike will continue tomorrow, which is Saturday. And then on Sunday, there is a mass demonstration called by the trade unions to oppose this new memorandum, this new austerity package that's been agreed by the Greek government, or maybe not. It's not very clear whether it's been agreed or not been agreed. And on Sunday, there's going to be a mass demonstration as the Greek parliament votes on all this massive austerity package. But even though they're voting on this massive austerity package of 3.3 billion euro worth of cuts and massive attacks on collective bargaining agreement rights and minimum wage cuts and so on, the European Union has already said that this is not enough, that they must find another 300 million euro worth of cuts. I mean, the whole thing is unraveling, and it's not very clear whether this particular incident will be the point at which Greece will declare bankruptcy, therefore sending a whole number of banks in France and Germany, mainly in France, into bankruptcy, thereby forcing the French government to intervene, bail out these banks, therefore increasing massively increasing the public debt in France, in Germany, in other countries, and triggering a domino effect whereby other countries like Portugal, Spain, but also maybe further down the line Italy, will also declare bankruptcy on the national debt. So in reality, if you think about it, the way bourgeois economists and investors see it as well, is the fact that these events are taking place in Greece in the last few days might trigger a whole new crisis in the world economy. And what is it? I think that this is interesting to look into. What is it that is being asked from the Greek people? Now, we have to understand that this is the fifth year, 2012 will be the fifth year in which Greece will be in recession. The economy is forecasted to fall by a further 4 or 5% this year, and same figure next year. It's the fifth year of recession. Unemployment in Greece has gone up from 400,000 to over 1 million, which is, I think it's over 20% now. This is in a country of how many inhabitants? 11 million or more or less. And the living standards of the Greek people have already been driven down by 3 or 4 austerity packages before that in the last 3 years, maybe by 15, maybe by 20%, particularly public sector workers. What is now being demanded and is being agreed, the Greek government has agreed to this in the last couple of days, is a further package of cuts, including 22% cut in the minimum wage, which means that the minimum wage, which is now about 780 euros, will go down to a net after-tax wage of 470 euro. And we're talking about a European country with prices, which European prices in Greece are not very different, not substantially different than the prices in Britain or in Spain or in France. 470 euro. But for young people under the age of 25, the minimum wage will be cut by 32%. Therefore, bringing down the wage of young people, if they can get a job, to about 360 or 370 euro a month after tax. Obviously, taxes have also gone up in Greece massively, and there's a new so-called solidarity tax which started to be paid the beginning of February in order to face the national debt. So this is the conditions that people are being driven into in Europe in the 21st century. This is not all, because there's going to be massive cuts in pensions, further to the cuts that have already taken place. I think it's 300 million euro worth of cuts in pensions this year, 300 million next year, and the European, the Troika, i.e. the European Commission, the European Central Bank, and the IMF, wanted another 300 million worth of cuts on top of that. That's not been agreed yet. There's going to be massive changes in collective bargaining agreement, and the way the system works in Greece is that the minimum wage is usually agreed between employers and trade unions at a national level. So if the minimum wage is cut by 22%, all other wages of all other sectors of workers will also be pushed down by a similar amount, or there will be a lot of pressure for them to go down. Many wages are calculated on the basis of the minimum wage, i.e. 1.5 times the minimum wage, 2 times the minimum wage, and so on. So this is a massive attack. It means that not only public sector workers, but now private sector workers will suffer maybe 15-20% decrease in the purchasing power, in the living standards. And this is not going to solve the crisis of Greece. It's not going to allow Greece to pay its debt, because all the most optimistic calculations say that even if all this is agreed and implemented, including, I think it's about 20 billion euro worth of privatization of everything, that everything that moves will be privatized. If they can find someone to buy it, that's the other thing, because they already agreed to 50 billion euro worth of privatizations last year in November, and they haven't been able to implement it, because who wants to buy assets in an economy that's in its fifth year of recession? So anyway, even if all this is agreed, Greece's national debt is supposed to go down from 160% of GDP to 120% of GDP by 2015, a figure that is still completely unsustainable. And if you see a graph of Greece's debt and Greece's GDP, national production, for the last 3 or 4 years since this crisis started, you can see that the debt is going up massively, while the GDP is going down, because there is a recession that's lasted for now nearly 5 years. The other interesting point about this massive package of attacks is that it is not only now a question of cutting public expenditure, including one billion. Euro worth of cuts in medical expenditure, i.e. pharmaceutical the prescriptions of the state spends on prescriptions. Not only is it a question of cutting public expenditure so that they can allegedly go back into black numbers instead of being in the red, it's now a question of driving down the wages and conditions of private sector workers and public sector workers by 15-20% or 25% if necessary. Because Europe has the same currency, they cannot devalue their currency in order to be more competitive, so they have to gain competitivity by destroying workers' wages. And it's stated in the memorandum, it says that we want to bring down wages in the private sector so that Greece can compete with other countries like Portugal and Central and Eastern European countries. So what is really being said is that they need to compete on the basis of low wages with workers in Romania, in Bulgaria, in Slovenia, and other countries that have now joined the European Union. This is a program that is completely a brutal program of cuts. Now, this is what's happening in Greece. And this is what's caused the unions that have already seen all these massive cuts being implemented to call for an emergency 2-day general strike today and tomorrow, where there were big demonstrations and so on. But everyone is saying, I mean, there is a limit to how much you can push the Greek people down. Even the leader of the main right, extreme right-wing party, the leader of Laos, he said this is going to cause a revolution the likes of which Europe has not seen in decades. And he is right. He is completely correct. This is going to cause a revolution in Greece, because there's only so much that people can take. On top of this, there's also other measures that, I mean, you have to understand that we're not just talking about figures, we're talking about the social impact of this crisis. One third of the population in Greece now lives under the poverty line. That's hundreds of thousands of people who've been forced out of their homes and into the streets. There's an epidemic of new homelessness in Greece. For instance, you take the health sector workers in the public sector. There were already big cuts back in November in public sector pay. And the health sector workers were supposed to be incorporated into one single payroll system for the whole of the public sector workers. But for some reason, this was delayed by 2 months. So for 2 months, December and January, they got their wages in their old level. Now, at the end of January, when they get the pay slips, because they made a mistake, or administrative mistake, the wages are cut retroactively, i.e., everything that's been paid. So health sector workers have been paid for 2 months at the old level. So, in fact, they have been overpaid, in inverted commas. Now, all that money that's been overpaid has been taken away from them in 1 month, which means that there's been cases publicized in the Greek newspapers where a nurse received as a monthly wage 20 euro. 20 euro for the whole month. And people didn't know anything about this until they got the actual pay slip. And so this has caused a massive uproar to the point where in a place in the north of Greece, in Kilkis, the workers in this one hospital, General Hospital of Kilkis, have decided to occupy the hospital and run it under workers' control. They go on an all-out strike, but it's not a strike where they completely stop work, but in any emergency operations, they will run under workers' control. And this is really the only way forward for the struggle in Greece. not only this, but on top of all this, what's being demanded from Greece is the following. A few days ago, some German minister made an actual proposal. There was a draft where Greece is supposed to give up budgetary sovereignty, i.e. the budget of the Greek government will no longer be decided by the Greek government and the Greek parliament, which is supposed to be responsible to the Greek people and representing somehow the will of the Greek people. But they're going to be decided by some guy being sent by the European Commission, a commissioner, a colonial overseer, that will decide on the budget. Now, this proposal's been withdrawn, but in reality, that's what's been discussed, and that's what's been proposed and decided. Not only this, but they also have another demand, that is that any money that comes into the Greek state from revenue, from taxes and so on, will be put to one side, and first, any interests on the debt, and the debt will be paid, and if there's anything left, then any public spending can take place, including wages, pensions of public sector workers, any other. I mean, this is completely crazy, and it can only be compared to a usury lender demanding his pound of flesh be extracted from the Greek people before anything else is paid for. And it's basically a destruction of Greek society, the Greek economy. On top of this has been going on now for 4 years, and this has not solved the problems of Greece. It's made the deficit, the debt, much bigger, and it's not created economic growth at all. The economy is now in a much worse state than it was 4 years ago or 3 years ago when this so-called bailout plans started. What it all amounts to is that the Greek people must pay their money back to the Greek, to the German and French banks, and also some Greek banks and from other countries. But it's basically so that the banks don't go bankrupt and the economies in other countries are maintained afloat. But this is not sustainable for any length of time, and it's provoking precisely this revolutionary situation in Greece, which might develop over the next 2 or 3 days, or might develop next month, or might develop in 6 months' time, but that will certainly come, because this cannot be sustained. Greece will default on its debt, probably on the 20th of March, which is when they have to pay 14 billion euro back to the creditors, or maybe later. But they've patched up so many deals so far that it's difficult to see how can they patch up another one. But from a Marxist point of view, we need to go beyond what is happening now, try to understand where is this crisis coming from, what is the cause of this crisis, if we are to understand how can this crisis be resolved. Because if you look, and this is the other point, if you look in Greece, the different left-wing parties and trade unions, no one has a clear alternative to what is happening now. Even yesterday, in the face of these massive cuts, the leaders of the two main left parties, the Communist Party and Syriza, they came out and basically said that the only thing that can stop this is an uprising of the people, a rebellion, and they used these words. But they didn't propose any plan. How is this going to happen? How are we going to... I mean, they are supposed to be the leaders of the Greek workers, the leaders of the Greek left. They are not offering a clear alternative of how this can be done. How can this government be overthrown? How can an alternative government be put in place? And what is the program that that government needs? And how can workers in the workplaces, students in the universities and schools, organize for this to happen? What is the next step? It's no good talking about uprising and rebellion in abstract. You need to get down to the concrete. What's the next step? And the main problem is that we need to understand is that this is not a crisis of the debt. It's not a crisis of because there was speculation or swindling, which there was a lot. It's not a crisis because the Greek people lived beyond their means or the Spanish people lived beyond their means, although they did. For very good reasons. And it's not a crisis of lack of demand, although that's an important factor. But the root cause of this crisis is that this is a crisis of the capitalist system. It's a crisis of overproduction that's accumulated over a period of time and then exploded in 2007-2008. We need to look at the reasons why this crisis of overproduction is now become so serious, because this, everyone admits, is the most serious crisis of capitalism since the 1930s. In the case of Greece, for instance, the fall in production is now bigger than what it was in the 1930s during the Great Depression. And in some other countries, this is also the case. Why is this? And the reason is to be found in the particular character that the boom, the economic boom of capitalism had during the 2000s, mainly after the 97 Southeast Asian economic collapse. And what happened at that time is that the ruling class was very worried that the crisis in 97 and then the crisis in 2000 when the dot-com bubble exploded would create massive social conflict, class struggle, and revolutionary situation, not only in the countries in Southeast Asia, as it did happen, but that will also extend to the core countries of capitalism, the advanced capitalist countries in Europe and the United States. And then they took a number of measures at that time to prevent an economic collapse, an economic recession from taking place. And those measures created a particular type of economic growth, which was based mainly on the following factors. One, it was not based on investing in production, but it was any increases in productivity and profits were mostly taken out of over-exploitation of the working class. Second, if you increase the exploitation of the working class, the workers have less money in their pockets to spend. So how do you go around this? How do you promote consumption, which is, at the end of the day, the only way to realize profits? And there were two ways in which they went around this situation, two or three ways. One, by the massive influx of cheap products from Southeast Asia, mainly from China. I.e., if you have less money in your pocket, or the same money in your pocket, but you can buy more things because things, consumer products are cheaper, that keeps the pot boiling for a period of time. And second, mainly, and that was the main factor, massive expansion of credit, in which if people spend money they don't have, they can get on for a period of time. And this is two things that we have that we have seen. Two things that we have seen over 10 or 20 years. They also lowered interest rates everywhere, so that it was cheaper to get credit, to get loans, and to buy things on credit. I mean, the figures are really telling. And this was accompanied by a housing bubble in most European countries, but not only in Europe, also in South Africa. In other places, there was a massive housing bubble, which basically meant the following, that people, working people, had a home, and this home, all of a sudden, was worth two times what it used to be worth, or three times, or four times, and so therefore people felt that they were more, that they were wealthier, they had more assets, when in reality they had the same number of bricks and mortar over and around their heads. But they, on the basis of this, they took a second mortgage, and they basically used their homes as a cash machine through which they can then continue to spend. But this is obviously, as anybody can see, unsustainable. And it went on for a very long period of time, maybe 10 or 20 years in some cases. I could give many, many figures, and that will be a bit boring, but I will give some, and that might be only a bit boring. But for instance, just to give you an indication of this, from let's take the United States as a case example of this situation that developed over maybe 20 years or more. From 1980 to 2009, so that's 30 years, productivity in the United States went up by 80%. That's a substantial increase in productivity of labor. The average hourly wage of U.S. workers went up by 7%. This means that workers were squeezed through speed-ups, worse working conditions, the massive casualization of labor, the destruction of permanent jobs and creation of part-time jobs or short-term jobs and so on, increased in overtime, a whole number of measures against the working class. Basically, wages went up by an annual average of 1.8%, while profits were growing by 12%. It was a massive gap. And a massive accumulation of profits as well, which led to other factors, as we can see later. The bottom fifth, the bottom 20% of the population, saw its income go down by 4% over this 30-year period. We're talking about 20% of the population. The top 20% saw its wealth go up by 55%. So it's a massive accumulation of wealth at the top that is taken from the bottom. If you see, for instance, in most advanced capitalist countries over this 30 or 20-year period, there was a massive transfer of wealth from the workers to the capitalists. The participation of wages in national income, a share of GDP, went down. Participation of profits went up massively in all these countries. Figures can be given in every single case. The top 1% share of national income in the United States went from 10 to 23%, the highest level this figure has been ever since records began maybe 100 years ago. 1% of population went from 10% to 23% of national income. And there's more figures that can be given. This was accompanied quite clearly and logically by a massive increase in indebtedness of private households. People couldn't keep up the normal consumption, not luxury consumption, but the normal daily going on. And so they took on credit. Credit in the U.S. or debt in the U.S. was 70% of disposable income for families. In 2001, it had reached 100% of disposable income, and at its peak in 2007, before the collapse of the economy, it was 132%. That is, for every $100 that the American family received as income in wages and so on, they spent 132. This is obviously unsustainable, but it was necessary. This was a necessary measure from the point of view of capitalism in order to keep up demand for these goods that were being produced. In Britain, For instance, in 1980, debt as a percentage of disposable income was 45% for households. In 2005, it reached a peak of 157%. That is trebled in less than 30 years. And obviously, this is completely unsustainable. Now, what happens when you have a situation in which the capitalists are getting massive profits, but there's no demand because the workers' wages are being depressed? What happens is that the capitalists start investing this money elsewhere, not in production, but in speculation. So it's true when some people criticize the current situation of the economy, saying there was a lot of speculation, blah, blah, this is crazy, and we need to regulate this financial sector and all these things. They don't understand that in reality, this is a consequence, direct consequence, of the capitalist system and the type of capitalist boom that existed for over 20 years. It's not by chance. It's not because people became mad and started speculating. They started speculating because they had a lot of money, and they didn't know what to do with it, and it was more profitable to invest it in speculation than invest it in production when there was no market for that production where profits could be realized. So we saw a massive, massive increase in speculation, which is in reality another form of expression of this crisis of overproduction. For instance, I have been looking up some figures about the amount of trade in derivatives that there is around the world. And this one figure that I found, I'm not totally sure whether this is a true figure or not, because it cannot be even spoken properly, because who's ever heard of $1.2 quadrillion dollars? I never heard about billions and trillions, but a quadrillion, which I think is, how much? It's 1 million trillions, isn't it? Sorry?
It's
1,000 trillion. 1,000 trillion is our economics expert. Well, it's in this figure that I found, it says that the total worth of trade in derivatives in the world in 2010 was 1.2 quadrillion or 1,200 trillion dollars, which is 20 times world's GDP. In the year 2000, the relationship between the trade in the amount of money that was put in derivatives and world production was reversed. It wasn't completely reversed, but it was about half, was 50% of world's GDP, the trade in derivatives. Now it's 20 times. 20 times is how much is it? 2,000%, is it? Well, anyway, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. And this is just derivatives. This is, doesn't take into account the stock exchange and other forms of speculation. So these massive amounts of money. I don't know if any of you have seen the film, The Inside Job, the documentary film, The Inside Job. If you haven't, I recommend it. All the conclusions and the premises are wrong, but all the facts and figures and the explanation for how it works is completely telling. It's very, very revealing. And it's recommended. You can show this and then have a discussion about the Marxist interpretation of the crisis, and you will get a lot out of it. And you've all heard explanations for this. Like, for instance, subprime mortgages is a case in point. I mean, there's a bank that decides that they're going to sell mortgages to people who cannot never pay these mortgages back. But it doesn't matter, because I sell you a house, I know that you're not going to be able to pay this mortgage back. But it doesn't matter, because you say in 5 years you're not able to keep up your mortgage repayments. It doesn't matter, I keep the house, and the house in these 5 years is worth more than what I'm losing by you not paying me back the money. I keep the house, and the house has gone up massively in value. And in the meantime, I get this mortgage, which is a toxic mortgage, as you obviously will never be able to pay back this money. And I cut it up in bits and pieces, and I mix it up with some other mortgages that nobody knows whether they're good or bad. And then I sell it to someone else. Not only this, but then I get the credit rating agency to say that this package of mortgages that I've got here is AAA+. But I pay this company to rate these mortgages, so they are interested in giving me a good rating. And then not only this, then I go to another company, an insurance company, and I take a credit default swap on this thing. So it says that if it goes bankrupt, then I still get my money back. Not only this, but then I get this credit default swap and I sell it to someone else. So, I mean, this gets to a point where nobody understands, but everybody's making a lot of money. Everybody's making a lot of money. As long as everybody's making a lot of money, and he's got a house for a few years. And because he's got a house, a new house, this also means that there is some effect on the real economy. People are building workers, building this, there's building materials being used and so on. So it has a certain effect on the economy, but completely disproportionate to what is actually being traded as a result of this. So obviously this creates a massive speculation bubble. But this speculation is not separate from the real economy, it's not separate from the capitalist system in this particular time. On the contrary, it is the direct consequence of the crisis of overproduction, of the fact that the capitalists have been pushing down the conditions of the working class since the end of the 1970s, early 1980s. And therefore, they could only avoid a massive collapse of the economy by creating these bubbles and inflating these bubbles every time these bubbles collapsed, like in 1997, the Southeast Asian bubble, like in 2000, the dot-com bubble, and so on. So this is an inevitable consequence of the capitalist system. It's not a separate thing. What happened? In 2007, the whole edifice started to collapse. First of all, the housing bubble collapsed. People realized that these mortgages were worth nothing, that these were toxic assets. Nobody knew how many toxic assets different banks had in their books as profits or as assets, which they were then using to lend money to other people and companies. And so the whole thing started to collapse, as we know, in 2007. House prices started to go down, and then people panicked and started to sell. And then they realized that there was no value anywhere in reality. What happened immediately after that was that the states intervened to bail out the banks. Because if the banks had been able to run the course of the crisis, then the whole capitalist system will have stopped working because there was no credit, the banks were not lending to each other because they didn't know where they were going to. So we ended up in a situation like in Britain where the state owns most of the big banks. All these guys getting massive bonuses, they are all basically, if you want, like civil servants because the state has a massive amount of shares in stake in Lloyds, in Royal Bank of Scotland and a whole number of other banks. But what happened immediately after that, the logical consequence of that was that the states bailed out the banks, and it was just a transfer of the debt from the banks to the states. And this is where the debt, sovereign debt crisis comes from. The fact that Greece, Spain, Italy and all these countries has these massive debts is to a large extent the result of them bailing out the banks. And the next consequence of that is that the taxpayers, the workers, must pay for that, i.e. we are being asked to pay for the crisis of capitalism. Surprise, surprise. The workers always are asked to pay for the crisis of capitalism. But the important point about this is the following, in my opinion. I mean, this crisis ran through a whole number of countries. Ireland was first, Greece, Portugal, but it's now reaching more important countries from the point of view of the size of their economy, and the size of their economy as percentage of the European Union, countries like Spain, above all Italy, but also countries like even Austria and France have had their credit rating downgraded, which is quite serious now. It means that the crisis is running its course from the more peripheral, smaller countries to the core countries of capitalist Europe. But this, and this is the other part of this discussion, is having a massive impact on consciousness. Because you come out of a period where workers were being pushed down Their conditions were not improving, but at least people were getting by through credit, through working longer hours, more people in the household working than before, and so on. So the situation was not great, but at least, I mean, you could get by. But now the situation is really bad. And at first, most people thought, well, I mean, this is going to be a crisis. It's going to last for maybe 1 or 2 years, and then we're going to come out of it. So some of the arguments at the beginning of the crisis where people said we need to all tighten our belts and we all need to make a little bit of sacrifices and we all lived beyond our means and so on, this did have an impact. But as the crisis is developing and is now reaching its fifth year, people are starting to say, wait a second, who are we being asked to pay for? And this system can't really work. And this creates a massive change in consciousness, a massive crisis of confidence in the ability of the capitalist system as a system that can guarantee normal living standards. Not very good living standards, but normal living standards. And this provokes a crisis of change in consciousness, a massive questioning of A, the capitalist system as an economic system, and B, the capitalist system as a political system. Because many people are now starting to say, well, who's deciding all this? The markets. The markets are attacking Spain. The markets are going for Greece. But who's the markets? Who elected the markets? I mean, who are they? What are their names? I mean, are we not able to decide over economic policy? And the answer is no. I mean, we as Marxists knew all along. But, I mean, this is not just a question of people realizing that the bourgeois democracy is the dictatorship of capital, where you can vote every 4 years or every 5 years, depending on the countries. You can vote whichever party you want. But then all the important decisions that pertain to jobs, the economy, the future, the livelihoods of millions of people are taken by the markets, the capitalists, the bankers. And this is now penetrating the consciousness of large and growing layers of population in all of these countries, because they're being affected by the hammer blows of the economic crisis. Marx says social being determines consciousness. It's not the people now all of a sudden reading Capital. It's that people are realizing in their own daily lives that this is not working. So there is a general questioning of capitalism. You see that in movements like the indignados in Spain, the enraged people and the indignant people came out on the streets last year. They're still on the streets today as we speak. But they came out on the streets last year. And what were the main demands? One, we, the people, are not commodities at the hands of the markets and the politicians. Well, the people are commodities in the hands of the markets and the politicians, but we don't like it. Two, against the dictatorship of capital. I mean, that was one of the slogans in the Spanish movement. And two, and three, they do not represent us. Meaning the whole of the political system, the judges, the police officers, the everyone, they do not represent us. Even though we might elect them, but none of these parties represent us. And in fact, you've seen in many countries that it has actually been social democratic governments carrying out these massive austerity plans. Case in point, Greece, PASOK government. Case in point, Portugal, a socialist party government. Case in point, Spain, the socialist party government. We're the first ones to implement massive austerity cuts. So people say there's no difference. Whatever government we have, people who decide is the banks and the capitalists. And we don't even elect them. We don't even get a say in all this. In Spain, for instance, there was a very telling moment in which Zapatero, president of Spain, social democratic president of Spain, who up until that point had been a nice guy, you know, I mean, he implemented a few reforms that didn't cost any money. And he had a good image as a guy who was weathering the economic crisis. And then he got a phone call from Hillary Clinton and a phone call from Angela Merkel. And the day after he got these phone calls, he went into parliament without even telling his own ministers and moved massive austerity package. I mean, he could have done it in another way, you know, but I mean, this was the way it happened, and this was a very revealing moment for the Spanish people that realized that, well, I mean, we don't get to decide about this. Or the people in Greece, they're asking themselves, why do we elect a government, PASOK government against the New Democracy right-wing government, and then they are the ones who are implementing these policies, which are not even decided in Greece. They decided in Brussels or in Frankfurt or in Washington. So there is a crisis that is at the beginning of the quest of a questioning, serious questioning of bourgeois democracy, i.e. of capitalist democracy. This is all very, very serious. And then governments are removed in Italy, in Greece. They remove the democratically elected governments, whether they're good or bad. But the people don't get a say in what governments are formed. There's new governments composed of former Goldman Sachs executives and people decided by the European, by unelected bureaucrats in the European Union and so on. And this is what is happening in all these countries. This necessarily has a massive impact on consciousness. And on top of this, there's the economic crisis itself. You have to realize that this has all happened very fast in a very massive way. As I said, in Greece, unemployment has gone up from approximately, I think it was 500,000 to 1,000,000 in a very short space, doubled. In Spain, which is a bigger country, unemployment has gone up from 1.8 million in 2007 to over 5 million now, and it's going to be 6 million before the end of this year. This is now, I think it's now 22% unemployment. This is 22% unemployment. This means one in every five workers. If you count people, there's about seven people in every row. Well, every fifth people will be unemployed that before had a job. This is a massive impact on everyone's life. In a place like Andalusia, in the south of Spain, unemployment is now 30%. And there's places where it's 40%. Amongst the youth, I think in Greece it's 48% youth unemployment. In Spain it's 49%. One in every two young people are unemployed. And these are also the most qualified sections of society, people who have a university degree, who studied many years, who speak foreign language. And, so, and these people are being left idle because of the capitalist crisis. In Spain, there's about 500,000 people lost, 500,000 families have lost their homes, had their homes repossessed by the banks. And at the same time, they just published this figure that there's 800,000 new homes that have been built and have not been sold. They are empty. They cannot be sold. This is just new built homes. There's also another 3 million homes that are empty because they can't sell them. So, I mean, this gets people thinking. It's quite clear there's something wrong. And what's wrong is the capitalist profit motive making system. So this is creating a massive crisis. And this crisis is expressed in different ways in different countries. Obviously, there's countries like Greece, Portugal, and Spain, and Italy, and other countries, where the crisis is more severe, and the impact on consciousness is much bigger. But people in other countries are also looking at this, because they can realize that this is not just Greece. Greece is the worst case scenario. It's the worst case scenario of capitalist crisis in Europe. But it's just because it's a bit further ahead than the other countries. All the other countries are moving in the same direction. You see, for instance, the reform of the national collective bargaining agreement that they just implemented in Greece, or they just agreed in Greece, it's not been voted yet, is exactly the same one, or is very, very similar, even in details, to the one that's been proposed today in the Spanish parliament by the newly elected right-wing government. And it's exactly the same that's already been implemented in Italy by the boss of Fiat, which basically says there's going to be no unions here, there's going to be no collective bargaining, and I'm deciding on all aspects of the contract relationship between workers and bosses. There's a demonstration called in Portugal tomorrow or Sunday, and the slogan is, "We are going the same way as Greece." And this is a demonstration called by the main trade union confederation, the CGTP, basically saying that, look, this is what's coming to us. These measures that are being implemented in Greece is what's coming to Portugal. And it's exactly the same measures. The abolition of any bonus space, 20% cut in public sector wages. In Greece, they want to sack 150,000 public sector workers, 15,000 immediately. And the same in Portugal, and the same in Spain. In Spain, there's whole regions like Valencia that basically bankrupt, where the regional government can't pay the chemists for the money they owe them for prescriptions. They can't pay heating for schools where students have to go with big jackets to school. Same in Greece. In Greece, the local government in Thessaloniki started giving free food to school children because some of them are fainting because they're malnourished. They don't get enough food at home and they don't get a lunch packet. This is a situation that is happening in these countries, but it's coming to the other countries because the crisis of capitalism will eventually work its way through all the other countries. This is fueling massive class struggle. We have seen general strikes in Greece. I think it's now 17 general strikes. We've seen general strikes in Portugal, in Spain. We've seen a massive general strike in Belgium. Only, when was it? 2 weeks ago? On the 30th of January. And we have seen a massive wave of strikes in France. But what you could say is missing from all this, and Greece is the country that reveals this most sharply, is that there is no alternative being offered by the leaders of the trade unions or the political parties. People are moving to the left massively. The latest opinion poll in Greece says that PASOK, which used to have 44% in the elections in 2009, is now down to 8%. The Communist Party, which had 4, 5, or 6%, is now up to 12 or 13%. It was a bit higher in November. And Syriza, coalition of the radical left, another important left party, is up from 4% in 2009 to I think it's now 12% as well. And it used to be higher. And there's another party, Democratic Left, which is not really a left party, but I mean it appears as left, let's say, and they are up to 18%. So there's a massive shift to the left, but there is no real alternative being offered in any of these countries. You see the trade union leaders and the left party leaders that should be saying things clearly, starting by this is a crisis of capitalist system. They are proposing all sorts of Keynesian solutions. Man in the bust over there. They basically say what needs to happen is that the state needs to spend more money, invest in the economy, in this way kickstart the economy, generate demand and so on. We need to regulate the banks and the financial sector. We need to issue euro bonds as if the markets are not going to attack euro bonds. I mean, and all these sorts of solutions, which are completely utopian, is the only solution that's being offered. And there's like a split between the nationalist, chauvinistic section of the left that says all the fault is the euro's fault and we need to get out of Europe and so on. And then there's the other ones who say, no, we need a social Europe, Europe of the peoples, and blah, blah, blah. But they don't understand the fundamental problem is the crisis of capitalism. There's a massive gap between the instinctive understanding and questioning of ordinary working people and the programs that are being offered as a solution, even in the country where the situation is most advanced, like in Greece, where the workers have organized 17 general strikes, and last Tuesday there was another general strike. And the participation in the demonstrations was lower than in previous movements. Why? Because people think, what's the point? We've called so many one-day and two-day general strikes, and we haven't achieved anything. None of these plans have actually been stopped. If a clear program was offered to stop these attacks, and an alternative program will be offered, people would rally around that, as they are already doing instinctively. But that's the main problem of the current situation, that there is no alternative program being put forward that has a mass audience. And this is the big contradiction that means also that this period of class struggle, of massive attacks on working conditions, of important resistance on the part of working class people around the world, will take a long time to go through, because there is no immediate solution to this. And there will be a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, a lot of struggle. And through the process of this struggle, people will draw more and more advanced conclusions. And what is our task as Marxists? Our task as Marxists is to, first of all, gather a deep understanding of the reasons of this crisis and how is it working its way through the economy, and what is the solution? Because the only solution to this crisis really is that we put an end to the profit-making motive of the capitalist system. Either we take the economy into common ownership and democratic control, so that the motor force of the economy is no longer private profit, which is obviously in contradiction with the needs of the majority of the population, but that we democratically run in the benefit the economy in the benefit of the majority of the people. And this cannot be done in one country. It has to be done, first of all, starting in one country, yes, but with an internationalist appeal throughout Europe, throughout the world. Such a program will have a massive following at this point, but it's not been put forward by any mass organization at the time. And therefore, we need to patiently explain and gather the cadres of Marxism, of the Marxist tendency, so that we can eventually jump this massive gap that that exists. There will be a process in which people, through their own experience, will push further to the left. The organizations of the working class will also be pushed to take action. There will be splits to the right and to the left. And it is our task to intervene in this process, explaining the fundamental ideas of Marxism. It is not the case that this crisis has no solution. This crisis has actually two solutions. A solution from the point of view of the working class, which is the one I just described, and a solution from the point of view of the ruling class, which is what's being implemented in Greece, and it's coming to a country near you very very soon if we don't stop it. I mean, eventually, capitalism, by destroying massive destruction of the productive forces, massive pushing down of workers' wages and conditions, will recover profitability. Will come out of this crisis. It will be more difficult this time than any other time because of the massive accumulation of debt from the previous period, but it will eventually get there. But at the same time, what we can say is that this has never been a better time for a very long time. There's never been a better time to explain the ideas of Marxism, the ideas of a revolutionary socialist transformation of society, because they now coincide, connect with the living experience of millions of people, with the conclusions that millions of people are already unconsciously, in an instinctive way, already drawing. And this is obviously a source of optimism for us. Thank you.